Joe, you're back. How you doing?
Oh, I'm just doing great, Tim, particularly since I get to talk to my favorite podcast analyst in the world, Tim Kelly.
Well, thank you. Thank you. At least there's one out there that thinks that. That's good. So
yeah, well, start with me and then it'll grow.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right. The audience of 20 million starts with one, right? So, tonight we wanted to talk about vaccines, the vaccine cult. And you pointed this series that's out, this video series by Ty Bollinger, The Truth About Vaccines. And I was able to watch a good portion of that, particularly the first two-hour episode where he did kind of an overview of the issue, which was pretty good. It's pretty intro to the controversy, just to let people know there is a legitimate controversy with the vaccines. So vaccinations, what's your take on this miracle of modern medicine?
My first thought is that what we are dealing with right now is this situation. It is vaccination in the post 9/11 world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In other words, with 9/11, the secret society basically announced itself to the subjects, right? That, you know, there is a deep state cult that has some kind of theological or Luciferian perspective that has seized control of the government and the media, and is quite willing for its ritual purposes to kill people, right? I mean, that's how I see 9/11. And so given that, I think we have to look at vaccinations in a slightly different way. We have to be a little bit more concerned because, you know, what worries me is that there is a movement to completely get rid of what's called informed consent, right? Now, that's the principle that really comes out of all thing, the Nuremberg trial, which basically says that you shouldn't do medical things to people if they don't know what you're going to do to them and they don't consent to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that has been very steadily eroded in Australia, for example. You can't really get a job unless you've done all your vaccinations.
It's funny and how they ostracize you.
They've got all kinds of actually legal and financial structures. I mean, you just can't get these different kinds of work permits. You can't get different kinds of insurance. I don't have all the details, but it's a very basically draconian situation where the citizen cannot function unless he consents to the government's vaccinations. And so because we have this political situation, we have to worry that vaccinations are a way that the government, the secret society, the deep state could be bringing about the brave new world of a stratified society where you would have different kinds of levels of intelligence and, emotional situations depending on your caste. And these could be created by what they would be able to put in the vaccinations. So I'm not talking about a theoretical situation, Tim. I'm not saying, well, this could be something we would face in the future. I mean, I think the threat is right now, today. I think that in California, we have a vaccination schedule of about 70 vaccines. And in order to be in public school, you have to submit to them. And the religious opt-out has been done away with. Now, the problem, of course, is how to get good data on what the current crop of vaccinations are doing. But before that, and we'll talk about that, but before that, there's just this structural problems I have with them, which is this, that let's assume the government is malevolent. Isn't it tempting for the government to use the vaccination power to inject lethal or debilitating elements into the population that it despises, right? Mm-hmm. So it's tempting. And so because of that, we are, as I said, we're not in a theoretical situation. So in other words, the first thing we have to do is try to find a way to know what's actually inside the vaccines. I think what they disclose is horrifying. And I think what they disclose is actually related to the catastrophic rise in autism. Okay, so what they disclose is aluminum, mercury, insect DNA. I mean, it's just chick embryo cell culture, you know. I mean, it's just, it's an incredible list of things that if it was ever put as a menu at a restaurant, I don't think you would order this particular Blue's Plate special. So, but the idea that this can be injected is really troubling. And I think that there is a direct relationship. There certainly is a correlation between the increase in vaccinations and the increase in autism. And I will just point out that when I was in my vaccination era, I had polio, smallpox, and diphtheria. There was three. By 83, it was up to about 9. And then in 1988, they gave the pharmaceutical manufacturing companies freedom from all liability resulting from vaccine injury. Mm-hmm. And they're the only industry in the United States that has that incredible designation. And they are the only industry that is able to inject, using hypodermic needles, substances into the human body. So this is very troubling. And in 88, then they basically, the floodgates were open. And now the normal Center for Disease Control dose is something around 70. So we've gone from 3 in 62 to 70 now. They're vaccinating most children when they're 3 minutes old.
Yeah, which is insane. So,
So it's just completely insane. And because it's insane, Tim, right, and because, and I'll reference the work of Dr. Suzanne Humphreys, who did a good job of an excellent job of collating the data showing that there really isn't any relationship in decline of mortality from diseases and the onset of the vaccinations, right? I mean, people just have this kind of bubble world where polio was stopped by vaccines, measles was stopped by vaccines. They don't understand that there were trajectories that mainly had to do with hygiene and diet and a number of other causes, mm-hmm. That were reducing the death rates long before the vaccines showed up. And then when they did show up, these trajectories simply maintained themselves. So my point here is that we don't really have any evidence to suggest the vaccines are doing anything good, right? We have a lot of evidence to suggest they're already doing real damage. The current autism rate that I have as a data point is 1 in 48. I've heard estimates that this will be soon like 1 in 20. And this was 1 in like 5 to 10,000 just 20 years ago. So you can see that the brave new world that I'm talking about, I mean, this isn't a theoretical concern. I mean, it's right now.
And they're trying to normalize it because now you talk about people with rights, you know, people with rights for the for people with autism, and movies normalizing it. It's called neurodiversity as opposed to a neurological disorder that's brought on by inflammation or neurological damage is brought on by a foreign matter, namely something that's introduced by the vaccine. And so now you're getting a cultural shift. The societal memory is being changed.
Yeah.
About these things. So, But yeah, it's an important point because even going way back even to the 18th century, Edward Jenner is the myth that he cured smallpox, or he did away with it through his rather crude method of, you know, scratching, getting cow pus from infected cows and scratching the skin with it and giving, you know, yeah. And it turns out that vaccination program actually caused epidemics. And you have the case in Leicester, England, where the big protest where they stopped it, and it was the Leicester method where they did what isolation, hygiene, diet, and that's how you contain the outbreak. You didn't do it through a needle. But still, the mainstream history is, the narrative is that this was a revolution in health, and that's how it's taught. That's how most people think it. You know, smallpox, we don't have smallpox because of vaccinations, although we did have smallpox in the 20th century. What happened was because of better diet, better hygiene, better public sanitation, the smallpox outbreaks, if you could call them that, were much more mild and also asymptomatic because people's health was better, which is the key to all these things, not medical intervention. So.
Right, and I wanted to repeat the shout-out you gave to Ty Bollinger's excellent show. It's a series of shows on called The Truth About Vaccines. It's really worthwhile information. Recommend people check it out. He takes a very, you know, he's obviously concerned about vaccines, and he brings a lot of that information out, but he tries to be objective, I think. It's a reasonably balanced. It's not a, you know, hysterical screed against vaccines. He has people in there that are for vaccines.
Yeah, he's actually rather moderate.
I think he's trying to just, to give people information, data. And I do think that that's important, but I would just create an analytic point that I think people can understand. I hope they can. And that is, we're in the post 9/11 world, folks, right? We're not, in the bubble anymore. Tim and I were talking before the show about, the difficulty in discussing reality with what we call Normans, the people that are like living inside the bubble, someone who thinks that 9/11 was terrorist, from Saudi Arabia or something.
Normies, not Norman. Normans are the ones that invaded England.
Yeah. Sorry.
Not William the Conqueror.
Okay. Yeah, the Normies.
Normies, yeah.
So the thing is that I'm trying to address, people that recognize that 9/11 could not possibly have been something that has been given in the mainstream media. That's just nonsense. So we are dealing with an organization that controls government and controls media that is lethal and is willing to basically kill subjects. In 9/11, I think it did so for a political purpose to create the justification for slaughtering Muslims, basically. But, it also was a kind of ritual, I would think, that the sacrifice was the people that they killed, the thousands of people that died inside the building. So these are really sick individuals, and yet they do have control. And so when you look at something like vaccines, the first thing you have to do is you have to wonder, well, my God, what can I do to ameliorate, to lessen the power that they have with the hypodermic needle? And so, some suggestions are, try to understand what's in the vaccines. If you are in a mandatory situation, try to demand that there be some, investigation into the current crop of vaccine doses as to what actually is contained in them. Mm-hmm. I think that this is something that should be done every single time. And then second, in terms of the administration of them, delay them as long as possible. One thing that Bollinger brought out clearly was that vaccines, just as they are purported, as they are you know, stated to the ingredients they have. If you give them at too early an age, that's they're far more likely to produce violent reactions than if you do it later on.
Yeah, because the immune system, I think, doesn't fully develop till like 12 or something. Yeah.
So try to become informed about that so that you can protect your child. And then Bollinger also says that there is a developing technical science as to how to recover from vaccinations. One of the key things in vaccinations that damages the minds of young people, their development, is mercury, thermosol. And so Bollinger points out that there are plants, there are nutritional diets that can be used to get rid of this material. And also there are sweating techniques that people use. He describes a mother who, you know, whose child was autistic after following an MMR, measles, mumps, rubella vaccination that had mercury. And so the mother did research, and then she would sweat the child and take a towel and make sure that all of the perspiration was mopped up, because then the heavy metal couldn't then leach back into the body. So she reported that she actually reversed, you know. Now, you know, I have not seen these studies, and I haven't had the personal experience, but I'm just trying to give ideas as to what might be possible for people to be aware of and investigate in order to try to take some control over the situation, where informed consent, which was established as a basic right of humanity, right? I mean, it is a international law. This is being taken away from us one step at a time. So this would be something that we should resist. We should resist politically. We should not elect people that will not fight this battle. And we should try to support, you know, those like one of the Kennedys, who is not in politics right now, but I wish he was. I think Joe Kennedy
Robert Kennedy Jr., I think, yeah.
Robert Kennedy Jr. Yes, that's right. So, you know, to try to give support to them. So one thing, did you have something to say, Tim, about that?
Well, no, I mean, I think you're right. Correct is just the acknowledgement that that there are methods. They come across, you know, you'll immediately be written off as a quack, but some of these homeopathic methods aren't medical, so they're not seen, because there's such a bias towards medical heroic intervention as part of the brainwashing or the programming that's occurred over the past, you know, century and a half. That you need heroic medical intervention, and a lot of these people have lost their basic homeopathic skills or nursing skills that maybe they had before they had direct access to you know, medical intervention. A good example is like whooping cough, where people are now terrified by it because they're not familiar with it, and they don't know how to address some of the symptoms and how to treat with vitamin C, then have, you know, proper homeopathic care so you can keep the baby who has whooping cough, they can cope with it, and they then emerge from the disease that much stronger because their immune system becomes educated. Now, you know, with antibiotics, you kill the immune system and you just make it worse. And it turns out with even some of the whooping coughers, when there's more whooping cough cases now than there were in 1960 after, you know, 50 years, more than 50, you know, 50 years of inoculating for it. But it's just something where a lot of these things were good nutrition. It's often vitamin deficiency, which aggravates these diseases. Another example is a lot of these diseases, like measles and chickenpox, were considered trivial to earlier generations, and old people laugh at the panic that the media stirs up over, like, a measles outbreak, you know, and, which is right. 100 cases, and most of whom were people who were inoculated for it, you know, so there you go.
Right.
You know, but again, these childhood illnesses they were beneficial, because once the child gets these diseases and his immune system is that much more educated, he also develops what they call cellular immunity, which means that your body, you'll be able for the rest of your life to fight off diseases, even cancer for that matter. Your immune system is that much stronger, and that's perhaps why we're seeing cancer in younger and younger people, because they were immunized for these things, supposedly inoculated for these things, and they never experienced these diseases naturally, and their immune systems are weaker now, not to mention all the impurities that are dumped into their body, they're injected into their muscle tissue, which might be problematic, you know, like formaldehyde or aluminum or mercury or, you know, polysorbate.
Yeah, stuff like that, yeah. Which
and what happens to, and whatever else falls into the mix when they're making it in the factory in China. So
exactly, yeah. Bearing in mind, of course, that, you know, we were through evolution, obviously exposed to these minerals, you know, aluminum and mercury, even, you know, but they were always oral or nasal consumption.
That's the big
difference.
So
the body has systems, you know, to be able to leach these materials out.
The needle bypasses the respiratory and digestive system, which is key to the immune system, which is a violation.
So that's why, you know, when you get a situation where the immune system's not behaving normally, I mean, you have to look at what did this unnatural system of injections have to do with this? And, you know, it's hard because we have so many toxins in the environment. And that's one of the things that I think that the vaccine makers can hide behind, basically, is that, you know, we have hundreds of toxins, glyphosate, right? These things are everywhere. And so it becomes impossible to basically rotate out one component and say, well, this is causal, because you don't know it. It could be the reaction of all of the things.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the actual list of ingredients in vaccines, and then think of things like these are compounding, you know, with like mercury and aluminum, as you have more and more vaccines. It isn't the one vaccine or any one thing that's going to probably push someone over the edge into what can be called autism. And nor is autism a binary event. I mean, it's a whole sliding scale of symptoms. So they can hide behind the fog a bit, you know, because there's so much. But what I would suggest is that any parent that has a child that even appears fragile in some way, whose, you know, development looks as though that there are difficulties, should immediately go into crisis mode in terms of allowing any kind of foreign substance to be put in the kid's food or to his body. You know, and then learn a lot about how to control these effects through nutrition and through different techniques, because you really won't get a second chance. And if the kid is starting to slide into autism, April Bowden describes her story. You did an interview with her, which really, you know, was very, had a lot of impact on me. And, you know, she talks about how the medical professionals, even as the child was exhibiting symptoms of autism, we're telling her, you know, you got to go ahead with more vaccinations, right?
Yeah.
So this is, and they were going to remove, a social program that she needed if she didn't. So this is what we're facing, if you're able to, don't go into the hospital for a birth. I know, Tim, you know something about this.
Yeah, I have six children, and my last child, my wife, decided to have a home birth because she got sick and tired of dealing with the hospitals, and with, you know, the infection risk, all the unnecessary steps, of course, the push towards vaccinations, and again, this is a learning we all learn as we age, and each child of mine was vaccinated less and less and less as I learned more, till the final one wasn't vaccinated at all, and he's as healthy, you know, no problems. And he's 2.5 years old. You know, his immune system's able to develop properly, and he's breastfed. He's got a, you know, an attentive mother, which is another thing. Is a lot of things you hear about, like, the importance of breast milk to a baby's immunity, because often a baby is getting its immunity from the mother, and that's another that really cramps the lifestyle of the feminist, doesn't it? That baby has to be with the mother. You know, oh no, what are we going to do? We need a, you know, what? Why? How can you be liberated when you have a suckling, right? You can't. And so this, oh boy, what are you going to do now? So you marginalize breastfeeding for a generation, which they did in the 60s.
And you can really see how incredibly evil the way that feminism was weaponized was, because they really were trying to separate the mother and the child.
The child, which is, I mean, and that is the key way to traumatize a child. I mean, that's why the elite always had, you know, nursemaids and attendants. It's a way of nurturing psychopaths. And so,
sure.
You know, they're applying to society in general. The baby needs to be with the mother. But as I read about this, what's even problematic is, as you have a generation of people who've been immunized, quote unquote, who've gotten their vaccines, and they haven't developed proper immunity because of the vaccines. They didn't experience the disease naturally, so they didn't develop the healthy immunity, so they don't have it to pass on to their babies. So it becomes intergenerational.
And this is, exactly. You know, I mean, it's just it's catastrophic. And now, I mean, how do you even rotate out variables as the new generation becomes more and more sick? And so you can see we're really on a, you know, a death spiral here. And then, of course, there is the science, which is, you know, bogus. The real, you know, control group that needs to be done is vaccinated versus unvaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
That's the control group that we really want. That's the controls that we want to set up. Because if such tests were done, in my opinion, you would just see an overwhelming difference. The unvaccinated children would, in fact, have dramatically better health and better immune systems, too, mm-hmm. for all the reasons that you mentioned. There was a study about 4 or 5 months ago that attempted such a, you know, a demographic observation, and it had been accepted by so-called peer review, which is something that I am not a fan of, but in any case, it had passed those tests, but then was pulled. They wouldn't essentially publish it because it showed that there was better health in the unvaccinated kids. and so anyway, that is a way that the population gets basically, you know, kind of conditioned into it. And then the other way is by when they test basically for autism, they, you know, they go after Andrew Wakefield. We can talk about that in a bit, but Wakefield's the original study, the one that he was, you know, so pillared for, actually wasn't a study of vaccines. He reported that the parents of a great number of the children that they were studying, who had basically what's called, you know, persuasive development disorder or autism, that the parents told him that this onset immediately after a vaccination, and he reported that. What he was actually studying was the relationship between damage to the biome, the gut,
mm-hmm.
and development disorder. And the study that Wakefield designed has been replicated, I believe, 30 times. In other words, you know, the science now is actually kind of moving quickly in terms of this, the importance of the biome, all of the bacteria, you know, that you have in terms of development of the brain. And so what Wakefield has found and has been confirmed is that if the bacteria is damaged and not normal, then the mental development is not normal.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was really what Wakefield was talking about. And this has been well established. Now, the correlation between the vaccination and and the damage to the biome is a different phenomenon. But the relationship between the biome and autism is now pretty well established. So that's one thing, is that they talk about Wakefield's study has been debunked, and they just put these stuff out, but actually this never happened. Anyone who actually gets in there and studies what happened will see that no, Wakefield didn't. He wasn't shown to be a quack. I mean, it was actually very straightforward science, very easy to follow. But what they do then to show that the vaccinations are not harmful is use a different kind of hocus pocus. There was a study as an example of this that was I believe the team that produced it was, I'm not sure who was heading it, but it was published by what's called the Lewin Group, and it claimed that it had looked at 95,000 children and found no relationship between vaccinated and unvaccinated kids in terms of rates or in terms of autism. Right. Now, so how they did this was they got 95,000 kids in a computer, and they found the cases where you had kids who had autism and older siblings that also had autism, right? But that the second child had not been vaccinated, or perhaps it was the first. I forget how the methodology was. But so basically what they did was, is they actually only had 23. The 95,000 was just a red herring. But they had 23 that they had autism in one child and vaccination and autism in another. So it isn't even clear to me when you think about it. It's like, well, what does that really show, for God's sakes? But they said that the severity or course of the autism didn't differ between the vaccinated and unvaccinated children. Okay, so the study is just, on its face, it's bogus. It purports 95,000, but actually there's really just 23 that they studied. But here's the kicker. Okay, they defined vaccination just on one particular vaccine, the MMR. The child that had that they were reporting as being unvaccinated, all of them had vaccinations. They simply hadn't been given the MMR. So in other words, the way that the headline reads is that, you know, there's no distinction, that the MMR vaccine doesn't do anything and all this. But if you get into it, you can see that it was just designed from the very beginning, you know, to fool people. Now, one last point here. Tim, we had something that you can describe as regulatory capture. Okay, that's an expression that Ty Bollinger talks about, and what it means is that either the group of scientists or the regulatory body itself is funded by Big Pharma. So, in other words, the people who are going to financially benefit from the vaccine either have people who they're going to employ or have employed as the regulators, or the scientists are literally employees, like in this case. The Lewin Group is an employee of Abbott Labs, Amgen, Pfizer, and Wyeth, the vaccine makers. Mm-hmm. And so you have bias. These aren't disclosed, you see, to the public. So this is what we're up against. You know, they're sophisticated. The public is gullible, and they are getting rid of informed consent. And it scares me, Tim, because I really don't think you would see this kind of a push, you know, since there is no health benefits. I think we can state with certainty. Why would they be doing this? Why would they be taking away, you know, conformed consent? Why would they be making these vaccines mandatory if there wasn't either plans in effect or plans that they were going to put into effect?
Yeah, it's going beyond mere, you know, monetary interests. I mean, that's how you get a lot of people working for you, the motivation. Obviously, the control of the media, most of the people who do the propaganda. I mean, you mentioned regulatory capture, you know, with the FDA and perhaps the CDC and the World Health Organization, these things. But you also, you have a certain capture of the media because they're increasingly relying on revenue that comes from paid ads from the pharmaceutical companies. So they're not going to run stories, whether it's print or electronic, that make the pharmaceuticals look bad and might cause a downturn in the bottom line for these pharmaceutical companies. So you're going to get, you know, a bunch of fake news or distorted news about these stories. And I think Robert Kennedy Jr. makes that very point in Ty's documentary about one guy says, well, if I did that, if I ran that story, I'd be fired. I can't do that.
It's it really interesting in Bollinger, because I sensed in a couple of the interviews, one of them I believe was with a Dr. Fisher, but I could be wrong about that. I'll have to check my notes. But a couple of the people were very worried that there was something nefarious in back of all of this. Mm-hmm. In other words, they were talking about, we have to stand up, this is a matter of health, freedom, and you know, the motivation of financial gain, it just doesn't hold water for me. I mean, I think these people are evil, but I don't think they would, you know, bring on autism rates of 1 in 2 just to make money. I think that basically the, you know, controlling group, the deep state, the group that designed 911 and controls the media, controls, you know, the CDC. I mean, that group, you know, does have the Brave New World in mind. And so the people who are being interviewed, the nervousness, I think, is a kind of confusion. You know, they don't really understand why evil basically is afoot. You know, these people are supposed to be there to help the population. Yes, there's a financial motivation, but how can that explain just this raw evil? That's because they don't, you know, ask the right questions, in my opinion. They don't ask the questions of what is the deep state, what is controlling.
The greed is apparent. It's the malevolence, which is harder to acknowledge. And that's because they're criticizing from the inside. These are medical doctors. And what they don't understand is the medical profession as we know it, the allopathic medical system, the heroic medical system, was designed by these interests, by these malevolent elites, like the Rockefellers, to slowly poison, promote chronic disease, chronic health problems, because that's how you get customers. Now that's a monetary interest, but a society that is constantly chronically ill, weak, these people are going to be easier to manage, and they're going to die earlier, which takes pressure off Social Security and pensions. And so I can see somewhere along the line, the boardroom, people studying the actuarials of these things, how if you introduce a certain amount of toxins in the food and the air and the clothing and the, you know, and make sure that medicine doesn't really heal you, it actually just makes you sicker and manages health problems, is that a certain percentage of people are going to die off at an earlier age, and throughout their entire life you'll be harvesting them through health insurance, through medical bills, also through taxes, also through debt, interest payment, you know, it's usury, taxes, all these things. It's constantly harvesting, and people are going to be always ill at ease. Same thing with terrorism. I mean, they will be weaker, they'll be ill at ease, they'll be on edge, and they won't be in a position to organize and challenge your oligarchic rule.
Yeah. They're too confused. I mean, they're looking for the terrorists under their bed, and they don't see the oligarch, you know, behind the TV set.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that they're talking, I mean, the whole thing of hepatitis B for babies, which is, you know, social disease, and they're giving, what is it, Gardasil to boys?
Yeah. Which is a sexually transmitted disease, yes, that women get.
Women get. Yeah. So, and the fact that people can be convinced that this is good medicine.
Yeah, well, one thing that I wanted to mention, I was aware of, but Bollinger brought out in high relief, is that there is a financial structure for the pediatricians that basically makes them nothing but vaccine cops. Every pediatrician in America receives, they had the number, but I believe it was $450 for every patient that they have, which has a complete vaccine schedule completed. So wow, yeah. This is obviously a conflict. I mean, it's illegal. It should be. But this is, in fact, the world we live in. And so, you know, one question I would have when the pediatrician is trying to pump a vaccine is, say, can you describe your financial rewards for having a completed vaccine schedule? You know, they become our you know, when I heard that, I said to myself, well, you know, that just means Hippocratic Oath is absolutely dead.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, no one could take that oath seriously and take $450 for every vaccinated completed schedule. It's an obvious conflict. You know, there's no informed consent going on. You're not there to like study the vaccines and see if they're good or not, or know a lot about them. You're there just to push them.
And look how it's paid for. It's paid through this third party reimbursement system, whether it's through government, you know, Medicare, Medicaid, or through the insurance system. So no one's paying for it directly out of pocket, but they're paying through their exorbitant premiums. And then they're arguing about who's going to provide health care. Who's going to guarantee health care? Do you need health care as it is understood today? Do you need medical health? Do you really need it? You wouldn't need but they're arguing about how it's going to get paid for because it's so high. Well, I mean, you think about it, no one's paying for it directly, but everyone's paying it into their pool so they can make these huge profits from it.
Yeah, my wife and I paid like $600 a month after our kids left, high deductible.
Yeah.
And we did that until Medicare came along. We never used it once. It was just a complete waste of money. Mm-hmm. It's because we eat organic food and we don't smoke or really drink alcohol. And so we don't get sick.
No, Joe, you're over 60. You're over 60. You need to be on a dozen medications because you're old.
Right.
You know, that's the worldview most people have. Well, you're old. You're achy and pain, chronic pain. Well, you're old. That's what doctors tell people.
Yeah.
You know, they're not talking about
colonoscopy.
Yeah. These things. You need to be probed, poked, and poisoned. And you know, that's the standard care. And again, it's like people don't acknowledge it because that's how they've been trained to think. This is normal. Whereas health was normal. You know, now it's now being unhealthy is normal.
And 70 vaccinations, chemical food, which is basically just chemicals, you know, like pasteurized milk and McDonald's hamburgers, whatnot. By the time you get to be 55, you're going to need cancer drugs.
Yes.
Because you're going to get it. And you're going to actually just want to die because you're going to feel so bad.
Well, you can always mortgage your house to pay for the payments after you've paid after 30 years of paying it off.
Well, I mean, and if you look at the OxyContin epidemic in America, it's just completely related. I mean, it's so basically they debilitate the population deliberately, mm-hmm. right? They make them stupid and weak so that they can have 911 and no one is you don't have the virile organization that rises up clear-minded and like strikes back. Instead, everyone, you know, there's a puff of protest and then it all dissolves.
Think about it personally, how that works is we all had days where we're not feeling well, you know, or with a stomach ache, or you're in, and it just throws you off of that day. And most of the days I've been blessed with good health so far, and so I'm always thinking about things variously, whether it's work, but also other things like this show or the topics we talk about.
You have an abundance of energy, Tim.
Yeah. But if you're sick that day, you don't really think about it. You just think about resting and getting well. Well, yeah. So if you can make people in that chronic state or a lesser state, but it's weaker, it's sick, always worrying about their health, worried about their medical bills, you know, they all become a little, you know, you become focused on yourself and you're not thinking about what's going on around you. So you can see the psychological warfare angle of that.
Yeah, absolutely. What a great point. That is absolutely right. Is that the difference between when you are sick and well is something that citizens need to like be aware of and observe and understand, because you can see the motivation that the deep state has for making you sick. You know, you're impotent.
You know those days when you're so sick you can't enjoy a book? You just need to rest. Well, that's how they like people to be, always in a chronic state of weak fatigue, sickness, you know, and anxiety, these things. And these things don't make me anxious. They make me very interested. See, they don't have that.
Right.
They don't have a demoralizing effect on me. I become very interested in these things. But most people will be become overwhelmed by it. But if you're not feeling well, you don't have the energy, you know, you can't cope with these things. And that's the strategy. You can't cope with life.
Yep. Well, and you certainly can't organize a rebellion. You can't change your political structure to make democracy more effective, you know, more beneficial to the citizen. I mean, all you can think of is like getting to the CVS to get the Oxycontin and then stopping at the McDonald's on the way home for four Big Macs.
Yeah.
You know, that's your life. And, you know, it's just, I walk around and it is a sad spectacle, because you see so many weak and sick looking people, particularly they're, you know, males who are like, you know, 40 pounds overweight, that don't look like they can really exercise, you know. It's just a sad thing to see, you know.
Yeah, they're holding a 40-ounce cup of like Diet Coke or something.
Well, I mean, I saw this drink that a family was ingesting on the beach the other day, and it had a layer of different colors, so that when the thing is held up, it's like orange, blue, green, red, and then you would ingest that. I mean, it's like, God help us. I mean, so this should be illegal. I mean, all of this looks like, you know, well, the culture is crap because there is greed and there is stupidity. It's not true. It is not true. They aren't greedy. Money is a tool. They have all the money. They own the Federal Reserve. They can print all of the money they want. Money is not what they're after. It is control. You see, this is what these things give them. You know, it is control, and they are not stupid. They are long forward-looking thinking people that when they see autism, they don't just see the autistic child, but what they see is all of those children, the larger fraction, that didn't become fully autistic but were diminished.
That's right,
are diminished.
Because it's a spectrum, right?
Exactly, it's a spectrum. You see, that's the thing, is that, you know, if you have a larger fraction of kids showing up on the autism spectrum, and when you get to 1 in 48, believe me, you have a significant portion of the bell curve. Now it's actually reflecting, you know, autism. You must have, by definition, on the other side of the bell curve, a diminution of like brilliant kids.
Yeah.
You see? Mm-hmm. So that's what's happening to us. And this is what Huxley was, he was basically creating an accolade to the plan. I mean, you know, he wasn't warning anybody about anything. He was glorifying the genius of the people who were pulling this stuff off.
Yeah.
That they were actually going to create a world of stratified individuals, that where you have like a delta class that is only capable of being a slave, you know.
There was a recent article by it's a few years old, William Engdahl, about China and how they've imported, you know, since the early 2000s, Western medicine, the pharmaceutical companies, and they started vaccinating their children. And now there's been an explosion of autism in China, where it was unknown in China back in as recently as 1990. There were no known cases of autism in China. And now there's been an explosion. There's more than 1 million known cases, I believe. This is 3 years old, if I, right? It's now comes to light that a major epidemic of kids' autism in China arose directly parallel to China's opening to the Western drug makers and to the WTO trade rules some 20 years ago. In the mid-1980s, Western drug makers introduced multiple combined vaccines and steadily lowered the recommended age at which children should receive repeated vaccinations. They were backed by what are now probably corrupt officials, agencies in the U.S., including the CDC, Organization of U.S. Pediatricians, which received millions of dollars in favor of the same from the same drug makers, joined the bandwagon for early and massive infant vaccinations. It's just insane. China's new opium war. He says, by the early 1990s, People's Republic of China continued its unprecedented opening to all things Western. The government allowed Western drug makers to enter China in a major way. Now they have this epidemic of autism. It's kind of funny because you can chart. Doctors always been paid well to do this. Even Edward Jenner was paid like £20,000 to continue his vaccination program, even though it was causing outbreaks of smallpox. And it continues to this day. You mentioned $450 a shot. And so they're
for a completed schedule.
Yeah.
For all, when you give them all like 60 vaccinations, they give you this bonus. And if you think of like a doctor having like, you know, 15,000 patients, I mean, it's just an enormous amount of money.
Yeah, and I mean, that's how they run their practice, like an assembly line, which is completely antithetical to good medicine because each patient is going to be different. Mass drugging is always a crime. It's always wrong. And they don't, because that doesn't apply to vaccinations.
Well, think about the Hippocratic Oath, right? And then imagine a mother who brings a child in to a pediatrician, and the pediatrician notices that the child basically looks like it's not developing normally, right? How often does that pediatrician say, you know, let's hold off the vaccinations until we get some clarity as to where the kid is?
Yeah. And
does this ever happen?
Yeah.
You see? Well, so you see, there it is. There you're looking right into the face of evil, and unfortunately, it is this person with the white coat on that we are supposed to look at as someone who's helping them.
Yeah, and if they do become a renegade, they become ostracized. You know, like that one doctor was kicked out of her hospital in Boston, the Children's Hospital, because she wasn't adding against the vaccines, but she started practicing, I guess, what you call integrative medicine, and actually helping her patients. And you don't want them to get better. See, that's the problem, because the bottom line in the hospitals, you need. Same thing with cancer. You know, the poster child for childhood cancer is always the bald child smiling.
You know? Yeah.
The baldness is caused by the treatment, not by the cancer.
Right.
You know, and so no one stops to think that. And every time I go to the grocery store, I'm asked to give to cancer research. I have to say no. You know, not just, you know, I'm not going to, you know, more money for Big Pharma. Great. But you mentioned, you're talking about $450. Now, what I understand is the adverse reaction reporting system, the sort of this trust fund that was funded to pay out to people who've been adjudicated have an adverse reaction to vaccines, is actually paid for by the people who are poisoned by the vaccines, not the drug companies. You know,
exactly right.
There's a tax there's a tax on the vaccine, and so that was Ronald Reagan in the late '80s who signed that law, creating full immunity from liability. And because the worry was, we're not going to create vaccines anymore, we're not going to get in the vaccines because liability concerns. Of course, that does, you know, you're avoiding the big question of why is there such liability? What does it say about vaccines in general? You know,
right. Well, they have the vaccine injury compensation program. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the entity you're referring to, and that was created when they gave vaccine corporations immunity from legal action, right? There was no liability. So they created this court system, which if your child is vaccine damaged, you can enter into. But it has a very specific schedule and amounts that'll pay off. And it is, as you say, completely funded through the vaccination companies. And it's almost unknown. The people who go in it, don't get a lot of publicity. But 4,000 people have been compensated by the federal government for vaccine injury. So and very often for, you know, brain damage and death. And so they know that these side effects do exist, right? they are admitting it. They hide it. They don't let it become public, lawsuit stuff. It all goes into this government program. You're under strict, non-disclosure agreements. You can't go to the press. You know, you get your settlement, not the door. But you have no way to enter into the system that they have and then basically make disclosure about the fact that there is brain damage. These are real events, right? If this wasn't the case, then you wouldn't have this organization coming into existence and giving out so many compensations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so what does that say? But again, the difficulty most people have here is just acknowledging. One thing is just spending the time just to have a cursory examination of the history of vaccinations, this fraudulent history we've been given. This fantasy or this myth that's been created around.
Yeah, I'd start out with Suzanne Humphrey's website and look at the graphs she has of all of the 50 historical data of the vaccines, different sets of data, so you can see the history of the smallpox, the history of the MMR, the history of polio, and you can actually see that these things are not having an impact on the death rate that the disease causes.
Yeah, the morbidity and mortality rates plummeted with better nutrition, better hygiene, better sanitation, not medical intervention. And the immune system doesn't need medical intervention. In fact, you shouldn't avoid medical intervention because it actually detracts from the immune system.
And just to get back 1 second to what I see is the only real way to actually get a scientific understanding of this is to go completely unvaccinated as the control group against people who have the full dose of vaccines. And what you'll find is not only are they not getting as sick from these diseases as the control group, the vaccinated group, but their immune systems are stronger. Mm-hmm. So what you're going to see is these people resist cancer later in life.
Yeah.
That was brought out in Bollinger's show is that the immune system of the kids who actually were not vaccinated, who had exposure to these viruses as they were young and healthy, had much stronger immune systems later in life because of those actions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this goes to just, the difficulty here, I think, is a lot of people think, we have these medical institutions, these large buildings that are very expensive, and all this capital investment and equipment and medicine and doctors and these things. And since we already pay for that, I'm going to rely on it because I'm already paying for it. And this frees me up to, do what I want to do. Well, what's really required is the people actually do their own research over time and nurture their own critical faculties, think a little bit about these things. And, a good example, or I think I alluded to it earlier, is like something like whooping cough. When people were trained how to deal with this thing, deal with the symptoms of these things through homeopathy, better nursing care, you can nurse people through these diseases and they emerge stronger. They weren't as horrified with them as they are today. I mean, look at the media reporting around measles outbreaks as if this is the great pandemic or the Spanish flu or something. Leaving it to great pandemics like the Spanish flu, these always occur during wartime or great disruption. Even the Black Plague in Europe occurred during the Hundred Years' War, and this is the time when people's immune and also during the mini ice age, when people's immune systems are weaker because of poor nutrition. And better nutrition, people would have persevered, either fight it off, even deal with it asymptomatically in many cases. Like polio, my vast majority of polio cases are asymptomatic. The poliomyelitis only set in because someone was weaker or something. Now they also think that it's something, it's multifactor with toxins and these things. And it was nothing to do with a virus, really. It was other things. It was toxins in the environment. And it was more like Barré syndrome or something, not polio. They even think FDR had Barré syndrome and not polio because he was exposed to toxins on from a tannery that was down upstream from where he used to swim. So even that's being reevaluated.
I think that, you know, there just isn't good science in back of them. There is obviously financial conflict, mm-hmm. and just the routine malevolence and greed. Okay. So they should be avoided just on that basis. But then when you remember that we're in the post 9/11 world,
And the people that make vaccines are the same people. People who own the companies that make the vaccines are probably the same people that put up the Georgia Guidestones. So
you better believe they are. This is the question when you look at informed consent. I mean, to me, informed consent also includes the idea that the government that controls the CDC that is mandating the vaccine wants to kill me. Mm-hmm. So now, when you have that information, the consent doesn't come quite as easily, you know. I'm not so likely to go, gee, just go ahead and give me the jab. I really don't want to get the flu, so I'm willing to put mercury. You pick the dose, and I'm sure you'll know. See, this is the thing that this the public has to wake up to the possibility, you know, that the government is basically lethal. That's really what has to happen.
Yeah.
And because we can't change the government, there isn't the apparatus in democracy right now. We can do this, but that's a long-term project. Right now, we can wake people up to this fact that the government is lethal. It's, you know, a secret society that has a theological perspective which is grim in terms of the most of the American people. So we have to be aware of this and conduct our lives accordingly. And that means, you know, like in terms of vaccines, make sure you are someone who is informed before you give any consent at all.
Mm-hmm. If they say you can't go to public schools unless you get the shots, don't go to public schools. Don't use public schools. And you'll be better for it anyway.
What a threat.
You know, no
public schools. Yeah.
I mean, you pay for it anyway. But
you have to pay for it, but you don't have to torture your children by sending them there.
No.
And wreck their brains, and then on top of it all, give them vaccines that push them over to the bad side of the autism scale.
Mm-hmm. You know, this type of malevolence isn't possible. Just go through the history of the Manhattan Project, the experiments that were conducted on people, the downwinders when they knowingly exposed people to radiation from the test sites. The pathogens that were spread in certain neighborhoods throughout the 50s and 60s, and sort of some sort of a, you know, experiment, what would happen. We have adjudicated cases. I mean, the 1990s, government paid out compensation for people they were experimented on. So it's really just a question of the degree and of experimentation that's going on.
Right. You know, it's not a question whether or not it exists.
Yeah, it's a question of who's...
It does exist. But the fact that it does shows at a very high level the government looks at the population as animals.
Lab rats, yeah.
There is absolutely no empathy on a human scale. They do not look at the population as humans. Mm-hmm. You know, if you looked at... if you ever seen video of George Bush Jr., you know, talking about 9/11 or, you know, terrorism, he always had this strange smirk, you know, mm-hmm. like there was something funny. Well, what was funny was that he was fooling people, you see. His smirk was the population are so stupid, so mind-controlled and mechanically stupid, that they actually can... you know, be given this kind of explanation, and they will believe it. You see? So the smirk was really, should be the tip for the citizen, something is really wrong. Mm-hmm. And we've, you know, got to protect our children, Tim, and so that means among ourselves, exchange information.
Mm-hmm.
Start with that.
So I guess end it on. Just go out and, you know, watch Ty's series. It's definitely thought provoking. He's producing the show for the people who are very critical of vaccines, very skeptical to begin with. But he, I think, does a pretty good balanced job of it.
I like the show. I thought, yeah. I mean, I try to stay up on this stuff, and I learned a whole bunch of stuff from it. And I just thought it was pretty interesting, as you know. And so
it's very much like his one on cancer, too. The one on cancer was pretty good.
Right? Yeah, the one on cancer was great. I just think that, you know, when these kinds of information packets are available and you're in our world, or the post 911 world, you should be looking for this kind of information. Mm-hmm. This stuff isn't going to come on television. It's not going to come on PBS. You've got to go out and find it. And people of a different level of integrity and perspective, you know, have to create it so you can go and get it. So, you know, so I really like Bollinger's stuff, and I think it really should be supported.
Yeah, and also overall health is, I was listening to a doctor, I think is one of these alternative doctors, Caldwell, about cancer, claims he can cure cancer through some of the, you know, through cleansing and these things, which makes a lot of sense. As a layperson, I can't render judgment on these things. I can, right. You know, it's really difficult for me. I really can't say I know, but I'm skeptical. Obviously, the standard care is gruesome and deadly and really needs to be reevaluated. Let's just put it that way. We're, you know, cut, burn, and poison method that we've been doing the past 100 years. But he was talking about disease in general. He's saying, we tend to think of getting sick, we're being infected, invaded by microbes. You have to avoid the microbes, at all costs. And this is also feeds into the vaccination idea, where, but he says, that's not true. What happens is we interact with microbes all the time. And if you're healthy, it doesn't bother you. You're asymptomatic. You deal with it because your body is strong. It's when the body is weak that these microbes, the viruses and the diseases cause a problem because you're in a weakened state. So the key is boosting the body's immune system, overall health. That goes to diet. It goes to these things. But this is contradictory to the business model that is the New World Order, that is the current health system. It's also, it causes people to have to reevaluate the whole modern world and how we live with processed food and, you know, this fast-paced life and these things. The whole pattern of modern life seems to be going against health because none of us has the time to eat properly, to take care of ourselves. We're rush, 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 and we're taking these poisons, then we become weaker. Then we seek attention from the very people who are making us sick. I mean, but it seems to make sense. It means that you would, you know, stress higher quality food. You pay more on food on one end, you're going to pay a lot less on medical bills on the other end. You know, if you took time to prepare.
I just don't go to, you know, I said this before, I don't go to doctors. I mean, I would go to if I had a, you know, a wound, I needed stitching or some broken bone or something. Yeah. And I would use things like I had a cataract removed. I had cataracts, a very bad cataract, and so I had that mechanical medicine. But as far as the chemicals, no, I'm just not interested. I don't want, you know, if I had high blood pressure, I would find some way to deal with it that would be non-chemical. I just don't believe in that. I think that if chemicals worked, I wouldn't look out at the population of the main street in the city I live and see nothing but sick people.
Yeah.
Because they're all on chemicals, believe me. You go to Costco and you see people who are like harvesting, you know, 10 vials of prescription drugs at one haul. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are in scooters, you know, because they're so obese they can't even walk. It's a tough world, but this is just the nature of existence, Tim. You know, we're in the food chain, and every day basically is a struggle. So there's no particular reason to be depressed or to see our plight as something that is, terrible. You know, oh dear, the Luciferian deep state has control. Look, this is just how life always is and how public health is always going to be. It's a fist fight. You've got to come prepared to defend yourself in the world. You have to be able to detect sophistry. When people give you the worker's paradise, you better be sure you are skeptical. But you also just have to find, a community of people that, are clear-minded, that you can talk to. And to promote your health and your sanity through your community. So the internet actually is a pretty good way of doing that.
Yes.
It's one of the things we have. So I hope people take advantage and enjoy our shows. I was going to say, I really like to read the comments. I don't respond to them, though maybe in the future I will, but I do read them, and I really get enjoyment out of both the criticism, and some have been really good, but and also when people see things of value in what we talk about.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, well, Joe, maybe that's enough for this week.
Hey, buddy, I can't wait to do it again.
Okay, I'll talk to you next week. Enjoy the weekend.
Thank you so much.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.